Hello and welcome to Yes Indeed Pod, a podcast about indie tabletop role-playing games where I interview creators about their games and inspirations and about the theory, process and practice of game design. My name is Mark Shepherd, a game design enthusiast, role-playing game editor, indie hustler slash promoter and interview podcaster. You can find me on Twitter at IamFofos and on itch.io at blue-golem-games.itch.io. This week, my planned interviewee and I managed to pass in the night, my fault entirely. Instead, I'm putting out an episode I'd planned for later in the year. It's an interview with Laser Melina Weber and Richard Melina Weber. Laser is half of the comedy nerd folk duo The Doubleclicks, who have several songs about role-playing games. They also make Gosh Darn Fiasco, a fantastic actual play podcast where improvisers play Fiasco, a role-playing game from indie success story Bully Pulpit Games. Richard is a game and puzzle designer and role-playing game writer. His latest publication, which we talk about in the interview, is Empyrean Investigations, a 5th edition supplement about investigating mysteries, which you can pre-order now at the Atomic Game Theory website. Now that's out of my head and into yours, let's talk indie. Today we're talking to Laser Melina Weber and Richard Melina Weber.
Hello! Hey.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourselves and what you do in indie tabletop role-playing games, although you're both a little different to that, so
it's real.
Taking a sideways look at it today.
Absolutely. I'll start because I'm the furthest out, but I'm in a band called The Doubleclicks. We sing about games sometimes, and I have a podcast with Richard called Gosh Darn Fiasco, where we play the game Fiasco, and we have designed together a what's it called?
Playset
for it.
For The Doubleclicks, yeah.
For The Doubleclicks.
A night at the museum.
And then and I play a lot of games, but Richard's actually a designer, so he can tell you about that. Who are you, Richard?
Yeah, so I am a game designer, game and puzzle designer, and I write D&D adventures and supplements and things like that up on the DMs Guild and on Kickstarter.
Richard's newest publication is Empyrean Investigations, and it raised $20,000 on Kickstarter, and it's coming out, what, next month?
Okay.
Next month.
It's an indie RPG that you can use with D&D 5th edition.
Yeah. It's all detectives.
Mm-hmm. And there's a cat folk.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah.
Investigator and a half-orc investigator. They're very cool, and they look like cat Sherlock.
Folk.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. Sherlock Holmes the kitten.
Yes. Well, Sherlock Holmes is the orc, apparently.
Yeah.
The half-orc. It's a beautiful picture.
Sherlock Holmes? I don't know. That's pretty terrible.
Sherlock. Oh, now we're talking.
I really
now
shouldn't have said that. That's terrible. Yeah. Okay.
You shouldn't have said that without TMing it first. Now we have that.
No, you can have it. That's fine. I would be pleased for that to appear in a game. I get a lot of criticism for my puns, so if they can, you know, make the world a better place somehow, that would be good.
Absolutely.
We hit on some Fiasco there, which is an excellent lead into kind of more what I wanted to talk about, which is Fiasco in general, because it is one of those seminal games that people talk a lot about. And yes. I'm coming at it from only a slightly informed position as having listened to all of Gosh Darn Fiasco.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, wow. Yes.
And craving more, I feel somewhat informed to make a conversation about it, but not totally. So why don't you tell me a little bit about Fiasco from Bully Pulpit Games?
Yeah. Why don't you pitch Fiasco and then I'll pitch Gosh Darn Fiasco.
Let's see. So they call Fiasco the Coen Brothers movie simulator.
Yeah,
I don't know if
that's
the right word, but it's a game where you and your friends are going to enact a story that is just doomed from the start to go wrong. You'll have your characters, you create them by giving pairs of players needs and locations that are important, objects that are important, and they all fit within the theme of a playset in general.
Yeah, the thing that I really like about Fiasco is that there's no game master, so everybody is kind of on equal footing, and basically when you start, all you have to go off of are relationships between your characters. So you're basically starting like an improv show with, like, instead of just having one word suggestion, like pineapple, you have like a list of 10 suggestions, like you and I are ex-lovers and they and she are a mentor and an apprentice. And then we all have a long-lost relic that is an enchanted shield. Okay.
Ooh.
And now we have to go and raid a, you know, a tomb. And then you just get to tell this story scene by scene. And I think the cool thing that Fiasco has is that it has this the role-playing game, I mean, it's just, my mom calls it make pretend, but it has this make pretend aspect that a lot of people are looking for in their games, because a lot of people like want to get into D&D or want to get into RPGs, but they're like, oh, there's so many dice and there's so many rules and let's just throw those out and do what we want. Fiasco is that already. It's just nobody's in charge and there's no wrong answer. The only wrong answer is telling somebody that they're wrong.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's just such a fun game. And the more you can just say, yeah, you've done a ridiculous thing and I agree with that, and I'm going to add another ridiculous thing on top of that, the more you can do that, the more fun your story is going to be. So we basically started this RPG podcast, Gosh Darn Fiasco, and brought in a bunch of people to play it with us. My friend Lucia Fasano is an incredible improviser, and Kyle McCormick and Kevin Arnold, who aren't really RPG people because they're just funny. And it was just a really great experience of us two real big D&D nerds and some people who are like intimidated by rules and dice to kind of create this chemistry that is like, let's just tell some silly stories and have a good time. And that's exactly what Fiasco is good for.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things I like about Fiasco is that, in very sharp contrast to typical RPGs, and perhaps Dungeons & Dragons and Fate are good examples of this, they put you very much in the role of competent people, whereas Fiasco is more about incompetence and very much people not really knowing what they're talking about or what they're doing. And that feels like a better simulator for real life.
Absolutely. I mean, the only real mechanic in the game and the dice in the game are designed to make it so, like, the better your day is going in the game, the worse the consequences are going to be for you later.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, like,
yeah,
there can only be a limited, like, basically the game is split so half and half of the scenes have to end well and poorly.
Yeah.
It can't just be a good story about competent people winning every scene, which is, it tends to be what a D&D game is. It's like, all right, you've defeated this dungeon, now you go defeat this dungeon.
Yeah.
Fiasco is more like, okay, you defeated this room, so, or this scene went well for you, so the next one is going to go bad. And that's what life is. You're absolutely right.
You mentioned improv there, and I feel like it's a wonderful tool to not only get people into RPGs, but perhaps to get people into improvisational theatre as well. People you have on the show are very much in that space, as you've mentioned there. When I've heard it on other podcasts as well, they've brought in the same sort of crowd.
It's either RPGs with training wheels for improv people or improv with training wheels for RPG people.
That's good for me.
Yeah, exactly. Because it has this, like, either way you go, it'll have rules that help you tell stories and have rules that help you play your character more intensely, or it has rules that help you, like, figure out how to play a game, you know? And we play where we throw away the rules that don't help us, and we've done that even live on stage with the designers of the game, and they've been like, yeah, this is fine, we don't care, it's just about it, you know, telling stories. And that's genuinely why they made it too, is just to make a game that you could play in one session with your friends,
yeah,
where nobody's in charge, you know. And it's just a wonderful game for that. And I think that the reason that a lot of people play it with improv folks is because they want to play an RPG with their improv friends, but their improv friends don't want to learn a bajillion rules because it's unnecessary. And at a certain point, you don't need a bajillion rules to play a fun story, especially if you have that, you're not afraid to get into character and do crazy things. Then just why not just play Fiasco?
Yes, absolutely. It has these mechanics built into it, like, well, randomized tables that you can roll on or you can pick from, which I really like. That seems like the best kind of a randomized table to me. It's very genre focused and focused on the specific mood of story that it's trying to tell.
Yeah, I should definitely mention that Fiasco Edition 2 is about to come out, and it's card based, which is actually how we've been playing Fiasco for a while.
Whoa. Stop the press. Hold the horses. Fiasco version 2 is coming out. Wow, okay.
Yeah, it was just kickstarted, and I've already filled out my survey, so I know it's coming soon.
Oh, right. That's very exciting.
It is. But yeah, it's card-based, which I think will be easier because it eliminates some of the decision paralysis, where you're holding in your hand a list of 36 items. You don't have to pick from so many different things this time.
Okay, that's cool.
And plus, then you have the cards you can hand out. There's less writing. You're less keeping track of stuff. So yeah, no, it's real exciting.
Yeah,
we're both jazzed as heck about it.
Awesome. Wow. I'm really appalled, but I missed that. That's a definite blunder. Never mind.
Yeah.
The first edition will still work. It's yeah, totally
yeah, yeah.
fine.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But like being on cards sounds really good. I'm a huge fan of role-playing games that have cards as a mechanic rather than dice, mostly just because I like games that are even more nerdy than big dice pool games. But yeah, certainly games with cards are definitely my kind of thing.
I'm so happy to be here for your extremely reserved British excitement. I'm very jazzed about it.
Yeah, so we were kind of talking about playsets there, and you have a playset. It's kind of fan service. Fan service written by the band, which is very cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we wrote our own fan fiction.
I listened to the episode again today, and it's just a lot of fun. So why don't you tell us just a little bit about the Night at the Museum, or just the museum playset? Which...
Yeah, so the museum playset, well, we wanted to do a couple things. We wanted it to be something where we could put a few DoubleClicks references into it, because it was part of a Kickstarter,
mm-hmm.
and we basically said we're going to make a DoubleClicks playset for Fiasco. So it needed to fit into the parameter of being a DoubleClicks playset. But we also wanted it to be something where you could actually role play and have a full story. And there are already like touring band play sets. Those already exist. So that wouldn't be particularly contributing to the narrative. And so, yeah, we had this idea of having a Night at the Museum type story where all different things could happen. So maybe things come alive. Maybe you hack into the radiation lab and something goes wrong there. Maybe there's like a field trip and there's interpersonal drama. And then all along the way, there's some DoubleClicks references weaved in.
Oh, there's quite a few.
Yeah. Yes. Just, you know, listen, I feel like I'm getting judgment for that. That was the parameters
of
the project.
We did it on purpose. It's okay.
Yeah. Most of those randomized tables do feature 5 or 6 different DoubleClicks references, which, you know, I'm a huge
yeah,
fan
yeah,
of
yeah.
that.
Right. We wanted to make sure that if you went into it playing for the DoubleClicks aspect, you got that. But if you didn't, if you just wanted to play something fun about a museum, it would stand on its own that way as well. And then, yeah, we got to play it, the two of us, with Will Heimarch, who is the editor of it.
It was a good game, yeah.
Yeah, and Rich writes a lot of stuff, yeah. But it was kind of my first experience working. How was it working with me, Richard?
Oh, it was good.
Yeah.
I mean, the good thing about setting it in a museum was that we could set up the museum wings, like the parts that we would expect to be there, and then fill them.
Right.
And I thought that made it really easy, actually, to make it a DoubleClick specific
yeah.
playset. Whereas I think, right, because Velociraptors can
yeah.
just be there.
Absolutely.
It's a museum.
Yeah. And I love Fiasco playsets because they have, you know, when they're created well, you don't know what the story is going to be
yeah.
going into it. You can read, you know, all of these lists of items, but you don't know, like, is this going to be a heist? Is this going to be a slow family drama? Is mm-hmm. this going to be about teenagers? Like, you don't necessarily know until you get your relationships
yeah.
and your items what the story is going to be. And ultimately, it's always going to be about people. It's not really about the thing, which is great. So yeah, it was really fun to make.
They have a lot of replayability as well, because you've got these different relationships that build into it. I mean, you could even probably do the same relationships more than once and still get a completely different story, but the fact that that is kind of baked into it is pretty exciting, and that works from multiple angles to make it just a good game to play more than once. So we've talked a little bit about, you know, using Fiasco as a tool for improv and using improv as a tool for role-playing games. Seem to remember that you are quite a big player in the improv scene in your city or in your local area.
Oh, I do a lot of improv. Yes, I do.
Do you find that that helps feedback into your role-playing?
Yeah, very good question. Absolutely. I've gotten very deep into improv since moving to Los Angeles. Like, to the point where I'm doing like 4 shows a month now.
Wow.
And I just did an audition last night for a musical improv group, and I'm doing a bunch of stuff. It's great. But I think that it's made me a lot more confident as a player, and I've just started running 2 D&D games as a DM, which I hadn't really done as on a consistent basis before, and hadn't felt confident like writing my own stories and creating my own stories. And now that I've been doing that on stage and trying to embody more characters and
yeah.
playing through more storytelling, I think that that does help me a lot. And
yeah.
when I tried to DM, you know, the last time I did it, maybe 5 years ago, I really froze up in front of people. And I was like, oh God, I'm doing it bad. And if I make a mistake, I can't undo it. And it's terrifying. But
yeah.
like, improv is all about like always moving forward, you
yeah.
know, and just like everything has happened and you take on that and you build it. It's all the principle of yes and. But I think that that has definitely helped me a lot. And then, yeah, of course, course, the fiasco, like, my challenge is still, my just, like, my personal challenge to myself is still working on voices and working on characters, which Richard will attest, I do just say weird things around the house sometimes, and I'm just like, this is my new voice, what do you think? And he's like, okie dokie.
No, I like that. That sounds fun.
Where it's like building up the confidence to eventually, mm-hmm. I mean, neither of us are ever going to be like Matt Mercer. That's not really our style. You know, it's very fun to improvise. And I think it's very fun to tell stories with your friends around a table. And both of those, whenever I'm having a bad day, you know, no matter how devastatingly bad my day is, playing a game of D&D or doing an improv show will really turn it around because I've created something, even though it's basically a sand mandala, you know, it is a beautiful thing.
Yeah, and sure, yeah, maybe these things are ephemeral, but you always remember them, so
yeah.
And the people who've been there will remember it as well, so you know, that is it's a good thing to take away. And I think these tools are really important for role players because, I don't know, there's this stereotype that role players are somehow socially awkward, and perhaps that's not necessarily the best personality for being a game master. I think that was probably my first experience of game mastering when I was a lot younger, was that we had a group of very introverted people who didn't necessarily want to engage with the game on a role-playing level and more wanted to engage with it on a mechanical level. And once I'd kind of become more confident in that, I could put forward different, like you said, different voices and different narratives, and all of that helps to build up. But certainly I think that some theatrical training for game masters and dungeon masters would definitely be a good thing in some of the games I've played. These are the kind of tools that I would like to encourage people to go out and play with. And Fiasco is a really good springboard for that kind of
thing. Absolutely. I bet Rich can talk about that a little bit because Rich has done his like 10,000 DM hours and he currently runs games for like years, like maybe your, he's run games for the D&D group and the game store, but also for our group of like wild role players who are more interested in that.
It's right. So funny. Just because, you know, D&D's got rules for how much you can say on your turn. That's always the most interesting thing. Like, difference about these games to me is, like, D&D's trying to draw you in and try to roleplay a little bit while you're taking your turn. And so it's kind of, spotlight's on you, what do you do? Spotlight's on you, what do you do? And playing these games, this wonderful game of Dragon Heist that we're playing with a group of improvisers, means that doesn't happen. It's just everyone like just exploding with energy and narrative all the time.
Yeah.
It's been fun to see these tools like be super successful. I'm the quietest person at that table.
Yeah.
And like when you hear some of the more professionally produced podcasts, I think I'm referring to podcasts versus listening into other people's games. The difference between people who are professional actors or you know, other theatrical professionals versus people who are, you know, just your average schmo.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The difference in the way that people interact with each other and the way that they talk all the time, or they, you know, they just have a great time and they are funny and witty. And I obviously, some of that is probably editing, but a lot of that is about personality and about bringing yourself forward and about self-confidence. And, you know, I've not really spoken about self-confidence before on the podcast, and I think it's just a really important tool for people to be able to get into their characters. And a lot of that is to do with how the game mechanics bring that out. In a game like Fiasco, where the mechanics are so simple and the character mechanics are so simple, it's difficult to see how that would work for people who weren't initially very confident and able to talk about things quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's just important to know that there's like no right answer. Like, even in Fiasco, you don't have to act in character all the time. That's what we happen to do on our podcast, but you can just describe what your character does, and that's fine. You can play in D&D and never speak in character if you're not comfortable with that. And you can, games of all kinds are great because I am an awkward person, and I don't like going to a party where there's no activity. Like, that is my whole thing. Like, I'm like, I don't want to just go sit and talk to people. What are we doing? There's no point. I'm terrified. Like, I love a game, and I totally understand not feeling comfortable. Like, all of a sudden, not only do I have to talk to people, but now I have to act and be a character. Oh, this is terrifying. I think that people, especially these days, now that there are so many RPG podcasts and RPG has become like a spectator sport, people think that it is a difficult thing to do and that you have to practice and that you have to be trained just to play. I think that to a certain extent that can be really intimidating, and it doesn't have to be that way. It's like, you don't have to be the best ever, most spectacular baseball player just to go play catch in your backyard. There's no right way to play. I mean, I guess there are right ways to play RPGs. Like, you have to be nice to your friends, and you have to, but like, you don't have to, you know, be an actor, and you don't have to be completely confident to still be playing the game right. And it's just about being comfortable with yourself and being kind to your friends. And that's kind of what the point of D&D is mm-hmm. to get people out of their shells in a certain way. And Fiasco, I think, is an advanced version of that.
Right. Like, I love watching people play Fiasco that have this storytelling narrative knack, because it just goes wild.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm like, oh, I don't even know what my next scene should be. I have no idea. And then someone else just does something just wild. And it's like, oh, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
I'm in. And I love that.
But it's not like you're being graded on it. Like, it's just for fun. And people, I think, sometimes are like, oh, I gotta do the right thing. I gotta be as good as the adventure's own. It's like, no, you don't. You can just, it's just a game. It's just for fun with your friends. Yeah. So just have fun.
You You're right. Maybe we should stop listening to actual play podcasts. So
I don't think you have to stop. You just have to stop comparing yourself.
Yeah.
Like, you have to stop comparing yourself in every way, you know?
Yeah. I feel like performance anxiety maybe is a little bit of an inhibition to particularly new role players. But once you get into that first session, that first campaign, you kind of see very quickly that it is not maybe quite so scary. But it's that first step, isn't it? That's the hard part.
Yeah, and I do like that D&D and Fiasco, they both have those spotlights for you. Like, they're built in because we need them. I mean, that's an important part about the game, is that it is collaborative. So I need, you know, I want to know on my turn, I get to, oh, perfect. I'm the one, I'm going to try this. Let's see what happens. Let's see how it goes. Maybe I'll try my voice right now. I don't, like, I've never done a voice, but but you get those moments that are yours, and it's really important, I think.
Yeah.
As a game designer, or as a, you know, as a dungeon master for D&D, is giving people those moments, because, you know, without those, that's how you grow, is using those.
Yeah.
I feel like the voices thing in particular is interesting, because I feel like you don't have to do character voices, and sometimes they get a bit tired.
There was a really good Twitter thread recently where it was like, we're changing the fantasy voices.
Yes, I saw that. Yeah.
It was so good. So, like, dwarves, instead of being Scottish, are now Texan.
No, or from Boston.
They're from Boston. It was just like, it made me so happy. It's just...
just do accents that are comfortable for you, or don't do them. That's also fine.
Exactly.
I guess it goes further than that, and to say that it's about character voice as well, and about what the mannerisms and the... a lot of role-playing games don't give you those tools as a game master, mm-hmm. which I feel is an omission, because it's hard work being a game master.
Very true. Another thing that's great about Fiasco, because there's no prep and there's no game master. There's just, we'll figure it out when we get there. Mm-hmm. That's the best.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes that can be hard, because when you start a scene, you say, well, I need X person, and that requires somebody to stand up and say, yeah, I'd love to do that.
I forgot about that. We haven't played in a little bit now, and now I'm looking at all of my D&D prep time and going like, oh, I just want to play. Let's just play Fiasco.
Yeah.
We should play Fiasco.
The sessions of role-playing games that I've enjoyed the most over my role-playing career have been the ones where, as a game master, I have done the minimum prep. And I thought vaguely in advance what I might like to get out of the session, and then just put them in some kind of situation which I hadn't particularly put any thought into. Say, a haunted house, and just said, go crazy on this, and, you know, just brought out some of the best kind of emergent play and narrative that was interesting and compelling, and bringing out character decisions which maybe were suboptimal and definitely more fun than you go here and destroy this thing. So yeah, I'm all in favor of low prep.
Yeah, there are certainly, like, if you prep enough and you're like, okay, they're going into the swamp, so I'm going to build mechanics for how the swamp works, that's fun, and I totally do it. I'm an over-prepper, for sure.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, it doesn't give you those emergent stories. It's not design something in a second that directly impacts what's happening right now.
Yeah.
So I think that's a lot of fun. I think it is cool to go in not as prepared and just be ready to, you know, make big ideas happen and just see what happens.
As Dungeons & Dragons is to the railroad, Fiasco is more to the dune buggy. You know, you could just go wild. You can go anywhere with that. I mean, it appeals to me that it is low prep. That is definitely one of the things that I like about many, many indie games around at the moment, is that they give you these tools to build narrative where, as a game master, you don't necessarily have to sit in the moment and work for 3 hours to do a 3-hour session, because inevitably your players will decide that they want to do their own thing anyway, which, depending on the genre of game that you're playing, may just end up in being random murder hobos.
I call this the Kyle McCormick.
Yeah, God. He's one of our favorite players. Yeah, it's funny because it's like there's so many podcasts I find and so many people who jump into games now because they think it's fun and they're like frustrated by rules. And I just want to, you know, hand them Fiasco and be like, listen, you don't have to have rules. Like, there are options for you.
Yeah.
You can build up to rules.
Yeah. Absolutely. I like that as well, that there's games around now which, as you said, have optional rules, but also have kind of build up to the full rule set.
Mm-hmm.
I guess in a way, Dungeons & Dragons has done this historically by producing starter sets and stuff. But
yeah.
I think the classic example that I point to now is sort of Forged in the Dark and Blades in the Dark, because that basically has in the rule book, you don't have to use every rule. We're not interested in that. You just have fun. Go out there and decide what you want to do and find the rules that work for you, work for your team. Ah, I like that. Yeah. I like that sort of approach.
I guess the advantage of rules and like prep is that you get something cool like Empyrean Investigations, which is Richard's current book.
Oh, excellent segue. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Which is puzzles and investigation and stuff, which is all about like planting clues and solving puzzles and stuff. But like you even just ran a game right now where it's like you can't ever predict how people are going to go about trying to solve this mystery, which is why you have to kind of be prepared to help them in various ways, right?
Yeah, I had to add a section to the adventure I ran because I was like, oh, that's a reasonable thing for people to want to do, and I hadn't thought about it, so okay, we'll write in a little bit here. But a lot of it is about just teasing breadcrumbs and then letting it be okay if you get those breadcrumbs in different places or with different people, just because you do want a broad level of entrances to get to the story that you want to tell.
Yeah.
It has been fun. I mean, that is that is me over prepping as much as possible for a game. I do like tactical, like strategic combat. I think it's fun. I played Pathfinder for a long time. So.
Yeah, me too.
it can be a very different style of game, but I enjoy it. So this is somewhere in the middle. It's like tactical but storytelling, I suppose.
Right, and you've developed these archetypes as well of different kinds of characters who are good at solving mysteries in various ways.
Oh my gosh. And even in my story, those archetypes acted in ways I was like, oh shoot, that's good.
It was like a discovery cleric. It's cool. He doesn't want to talk apparently about his amazing book, but you should check out Empyrean Investigations.
Oh, well, we can talk about it. You know, I'm very happy to talk about Empyrean Investigations, which is a 5th edition setting, a 5th edition splat book. What do you define
it as? It is a book all on its own. It has a small player section and then 3 adventures, 3 cases. And my whole goal with it is like D&D is about 3 pillars, right? There's the combat, of course. There's the social role-playing part. And then there's the exploration bit. And sometimes it's hard for DMs to provide an exploration experience.
Yeah.
And so I really wanted to kind of like lean into that and just, well, let's do investigations. Let's do mysteries. We'll have some combats in here. There's plenty of role playing you can do, but here are some mechanics actually to help people explore a little bit better.
Yeah. I used to play and run Pathfinder games on a Mush. And at one point I decided what I would really like to do is run a kind of investigation campaign. And what I had to do was basically just steal rules from the games that were better set up to do it, because Pathfinder did not have the tools that I needed. So this sounds kind of ideal for that.
Yeah. I mean, Gumshoe has done it really well. I love Knights Black Agents for this mystery stuff. But D&D, it's just not quite built for those stories. So
I feel like the issue with Dungeons & Dragons specifically is that it has kind of a binary task resolution system, and that doesn't leave much room for the nuance of investigation.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of mood of investigation that I like the best is noir investigation. That has very grey areas. That is kind of specifically a grey area, I suppose. How do you build up mechanics for this from scratch? What are the kind of tools that you are giving to players?
Taking a look at like the subclasses, one of my favorite ones is this Discovery Cleric. Basically, I sent out a list of pregens for the players for our first game, and 3 of them picked this one.
Nice.
It is the half-orc wearing the deerstalker hat and everything, so that helps.
Sherlork.
But they have their channel divinity is a psychometry ability, so they can touch an object and learn its history and things like that very quickly. And maybe not their most recent, you know, but quite a bit about it. So I'm giving them ways to investigate and learn things without necessarily, like, I don't know, in the middle of combat, I yell at this person a lot and hope they give me a clue. The Rangers have an ability. They're supposed to be like a divination-style spy, so they have a scrying ability that they can do at very short ranges. They're kind of like surveillance.
That's
so
cool.
There's a few things like that. I wrote a spell, which is like, it's my favorite because it's just taking a drop of blood and licking it, basically, which is gross. But then it's like learning what the creature type is and are they alive still? And you know, we don't have low-level divinations that are super helpful in D&D.
It's kind of a sort of CSI Forgotten Realms. So, yeah.
Yes, pretty much.
Yeah, with all this kind of forensic stuff going on in the background, as well as the front of house investigation. That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, the three adventures are all cases. And at the end of it, I have kind of a, you need to give your evidence. Like there's actually the briefing that you need to do. And
yeah.
I wrote up, like, using rules from Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective, basically like a very similar sort of question and answer period.
I feel like a lot of Dungeons and Dragons and sort of fantasy RPG settings have a very vague notion of what justice means and is usually just defined as if you do something bad, you get thrown into a prison. And sure, maybe that's a realistic emulation of medieval justice systems, or maybe it's not. And I feel like writing justice systems would be much more interesting than just having this generic, you end up in prison. That's just me. I like to go into that kind of deep lore. I'm not sure like whether the ins and outs of the criminal justice system would make for an interesting role-playing game, but who knows?
I don't know. Yeah.
Is there anything else you'd like to plug or talk about whilst I've got you on the phone?
In terms of DoubleClick's plugs, we are just about to launch a Kickstarter for a new album, so keep an eye on the DoubleClicks. Our website is thedoubleclicks.com, and if you join, there's a little place to put your email there where you get 6 free songs, and you'll be the first people to know when the Kickstarter launches, and there will be some early bird stuff you want to be there for the first thing. So please come check out this first project. It is our first full-length musical, and it is about robots, and they have feelings, and I'm very excited about it.
Okay, I want that in my hands now.
Yeah, I know.
That sounds amazing. All right, well, I'm very much looking forward to that.
You do get dice with it, so that is kind of a game. The tabletop RPG Lasers and Feelings, which is based on one of the DoubleClicks albums, is based on the fact that we print 3D6 sets, and this will have another 3D6 set that you can use with Lasers and Feelings if you want to.
The next time I play Fiasco, then.
Yeah, eventually we should have enough of them out to play Fiasco with.
Oh, then you have to decide which dice are for good outcomes and which are for bad outcomes.
Yeah, well, the cats obviously good, the dinosaurs are...
Okay, all right. So we can do this.
They're all good, oh no!
Oh god!
Well, thank you. That's been a blast of an interview.
Oh, thank you so much for having us. This has been quite an honor.
Not at all. The honor is all mine. It's always nice to have people on the podcast, but when it's people who you've followed and have great interest in and really enjoy the music and podcasts and games thereof, then it's very exciting to actually talk to you in person. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. And we should get a game of Fiasco together sometime. I mean it. I want to play. We'll hopefully be back over there soon if we can get into the country. So we'll do it sometime.
Oh, yeah. No promises. Yeah. Yeah,
I don't
know. I'm only joking.
You guys got weird border stuff going on, though.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. I'm sure it'll be fine. Yeah. I'll write you a letter of recommendation.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, wow.
Do you want to tell us where we can find you on the internet?
Absolutely. You can find me at thedoubleclicks.com or at thedoubleclicks everywhere. And then me personally, I am Laser M. Wepper on Twitter. And I have written a book called Crowdfunding for Musicians that you can find out about at lasercampaigns.com. And I'm a crowdfunding consultant. If you want to kickstart some stuff, get in touch.
And I am most places at just R. Molina. You can also find my stuff at atomicgametheory.com or all over the DMs Guild on Kickstarter. I got some stuff.
Where can people buy Empyrean Investigations? On Gumroad?
Ooh, on Gumroad right now. That is true.
Cool.
You can find the link on atomicgametheory.com.
Fantastic. And I will make sure all of those links are in the program description.
Good, because all of our things are extremely difficult to spell. So
yeah,
sure.
We combined two hard to spell last names into one extremely difficult to spell last name.
Yeah, it took me a while to get it. So I think that pretty much ties it up for today. So thank you very much again for coming on the show, Laser and Richard, and hopefully see you soon in the UK for that promised Fiasco game.
Awesome. See you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening, and thanks again to Laser and Richard for the interview. As always, you can find every link in the episode description. In 2 weeks, I'll be interviewing my friend Christopher Reynolds. Christopher is a stellar guy who does so much in the indie TTRPG space, including hosting competitions like the Okashicon X Ninja Hell Anime RPG Design Contest. Find out more in the interview. Christopher is also a game designer and contributed a game to every single Colludium bundle to date, including the latest, which is still available from itch.io. Colludium 3 is a multi-tiered bundle where you can get up to 17 incredible indie games starting from as little as $10 and all at around 50% off. It's available until May 8th at bit.ly/colludium3. I'm also taking submissions for the next bundle, focusing on queer and trans game designers. If you want to get in on that, check out my Twitter page. If you enjoy Yes Indeed Pod, please rate and review the show wherever you find your podcasts, or consider donating through the Ko-Fi page at ko-fi.com/yesindeedpod. Of course, you can always reach out to me through Twitter at IamPhophos, that's IamPhoPhos. I'd love dearly to hear from you. Lastly, music credits. All music is from BitQuest by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com and filmmusic.io. Thanks, Kevin. Until next time, remember, does indie need you? Yes, indeed.